Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. You might love Valentine's Day, or like me, sometimes you might want to resist the Valentine's Day card and flower industrial complex. Well, however you feel about this day, we wanted to drop into your feeds and say thank you for listening to this podcast about love in all its forms. And we wanted to leave you a Valentine, made up of stories submitted to the Modern Love column by readers from around the world. These stories are drawn from the Tiny Love Stories Project, which Modern Love debuted in 2018, where readers tell a love story in no more than 100 words. So here are some of our favorites, read by the people who wrote them. Happy Valentine's Day.
We met in Munich during Oktoberfest. I had seen him the day I arrived, a handsome stranger exiting the train station. That night, we matched on a dating app, but didn't connect. The next day, in a mass of beer drinkers dressed in traditional German clothes, I spotted him above the crowd, giving a toast atop a bench. We were wearing identical lederhosen. I pointed at him, slightly drunk, and said, "Hey you, get down here." As he jumped down, he said,
"You found me."
I didn't even know I was looking for him. But 3 years later, I still have him.
Huddled several kilometers up Mount Fuji, on a journey harder than we anticipated, Jeff looked into my eyes, which were blurry from crying, and said, "I wonder how many American Express points it would take to have a helicopter pick us up." Both of us exploded in laughter and tears. I dusted dirt off my body as he extended his hand and pulled me up. We continue up and down our mountain daily, in darkness and light, taking turns being the hand held out and the hand that needs lifting to keep moving forward.
How to meet cute. 1. Exploit Tinder to deal with your fidgety fingers. 2. Make plans to meet in Central Park, but don't send your location. Let's play hide and seek. Black dress. 3. Withhold your outrage when he gives up and says to look for him instead. 4. Spin in frustrated circles until you spot him on top of a rock. 5. Instantly overcome your fear of heights to climb to him. 6. Over the next 3 hours, succumb to a much different, much scarier kind of gravity. 7. Delete Tinder.
The sound of the garage door pulled us apart, a grating alarm signaling that his parents were home early. Wide-eyed and stammering, he gathered my things and heaved them and me out the back door. I redressed and tiptoed around the house, stopping beneath his parents' window just as their light flicked on, the small shaft of light finding me like a spotlight on an escaped prisoner. If only they had opened the blinds, they would have seen the boy who loved their son in secret. But they never did. And we never met, and the light turned off.
The night you were discharged from the clinic where we had been both patient and prisoner, you tried to throw yourself into blinding headlights. Days later, I visited you in a new white room. You showed me a list of things you wanted to do. It was long, and I was relieved. You had written, "Kiss Greta," and I looked at you, surprised. That's when you checked off the first thing on that list. And I thought of time, how ours had intersected to produce an unpredictable bond and a happiness that we had missed for so long.
I was old and transgender, but not out. I was searching the world in the dark with a small flashlight, lying in bed alone, smartphone in hand, thinking, what am I doing? I downloaded an app and began writing. Does anyone want to talk to a trans woman? Before Diane and I met in person, she said, I thought maybe I'd meet a friend. I didn't think I'd find love. We found love. We dated. We married. I transitioned to live as my true self, and we started a new life in the light.
As I waited for my friend to pay the bill, an elderly gentleman said, excuse me, I want you to know you make a lovely couple. My wife passed recently. Someone said this to us when we were dating. I'm passing it on to you. We weren't dating. But just 30 minutes earlier, my friend had suggested we consider doing so. I wasn't sure, fearful of losing the friendship. I am forever grateful to that beautiful man who touched my heart that day. My friend, who became my husband, recently died. I am looking to pass the message on.
More tiny love stories after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with a first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
It was Valentine's Day, and I was his first girlfriend. He nervously asked me if I wanted flowers. I jokingly said I'd rather have bacon. When I returned from class, he came bearing a bacon and chicken nugget bouquet.
I fell in love with a boy when I was only 18. Both of us were raised in conservative Christian households, and I said, I do, at 20. 12 years and 2 children later, we're still in love. But I kept falling in love with other people too. So now we're polyamorous. I have a boyfriend, he has a girlfriend, and we share a relationship with another woman. I enjoy it, but what I think I like most is watching other people fall in love with the same boy I fell for years ago. It's like, yeah, you get it, right?
We had been married just a few weeks. I used up the last of the milk one morning and left for work while my husband was still in the shower. I returned that evening to find an art installation on the table, labeled in neat handwriting on a folded-over note card. A Breakfast Betrayed, 1993, wheat on ceramic. Next to it was the bowl of cereal my husband had poured for himself, sitting milkless. For more than 25 years, we have continued to treat domestic annoyances with humor. Our love has lasted, but even better, so has the fun.
We've been married for 5 years and have 2 children. We rarely argue, but if we get into an argument in public, walking down the street or in a restaurant, Paul will drop to one knee, take my hand in his, look up at me lovingly, and ask, "Will you please forgive me?" Cars begin honking, people stare, and the waitress starts ordering a dessert on the house to my absolute horror. Reminded why I said yes to him in the first place, I say yes again.
In Massachusetts, if you're divorcing and have children under 18, you must complete a parenting program. For 5 Wednesday nights, my friend and I were buzzed into the local middle school, where we sat at small desks among the other newly single parents, the crying blonde in scrubs, the angry landscaper, the excited executive. I brought gin in an orange Nalgene bottle. He hadn't eaten for days. On the night I saw my son's geography project propped up in the classroom radiator, we kissed behind the clothing donation bin, and I thought I would die of grief and hope.
It was Christmas Eve in the intensive care unit. My husband was unresponsive. I put my head on his bed and dozed off. When I awoke, it was 2 a.m., Christmas morning. Death was coming, and I was afraid. I caressed his hand and talked to him. "I don't want to drive home alone in the dark and cold. Can you wait until dawn to pass on?" I got in bed with him. Our souls met. Peace. The sun came up, and my husband took his last breath. His final gift to me was the gift of light.
I didn't think I'd be dating in my 80s. My guy, pushing 90, is even older than me. Saturday nights consist of burgers and beers, SNL, and a shared bed. When we're not together, we're on the phone, worried when one of us gets sick. More worried than we were when we were young and immortal. He calls me his girlfriend. I call him my boyfriend. We have no plans to marry, live together, buy a house, have a baby. We don't think about the future, except to hope we'll be here tomorrow. It's now that matters. That's all.
Hi, I'm Mia Lee. I work on the Modern Love column, and I read submissions to the main Modern Love essay column, and among other things, I select and edit tiny love stories. We get thousands and thousands of submissions to the Modern Love inbox, so it's clear that there are many people with stories to share, but we can only publish so many of them. So we wanted to create Tiny Love Stories in order to share more stories, and we were also looking for a new format. And Dan was really influenced by social media and how stories are shared in such a succinct way via Instagram captions or tweets. For a while, I think he was thinking of calling Tiny Love Stories Tweeted Love and having the stories be as short as a tweet or two. That proved to be a little too short. So now the word limit is 100 words. That's been proven to be just the right size. I think that the 100 word limit, it encourages writers and encourages us as editors to choose words very carefully and very thoughtfully. They kind of remind me of poetry in a way because they can either zero in on a very particular instant, a very particular moment or interaction, or sometimes they encompass an entire relationship or entire lifetime. So it's hard to say what exactly makes a good tiny love story. I think stories that are surprising, that aren't just the kind of standard, we met X years ago, she made me laugh, and X years later, we're still laughing. That formula, I think, is good to avoid. If there's something that's really striking to you or that you just remember from a particular relationship or instant in your life, if it's compelling to you, it probably is compelling to others. So I want to encourage all the podcast listeners to submit to Tiny Love Stories. And we're looking for more submissions from writers of color to both Tiny Love Stories and the main Modern Love column. So please spread the word and please submit.
Thanks so much to all of the authors of the Tiny Love Stories that we heard today. They include Ryan Leach, Carrie Ferguson, Lynn Wynn, Topher Daniel, Greta Kerr, Gia Sanchez, Kathy Caruso, Michelle Huang, Jennifer Martin, Mary Janovic, Lauren Gray, Bethany Groff-Dereau, Kathy Lichtai-Makovsky, and Phyllis Raphael.
Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. The Tiny Love Stories Project is headed by Mia Lee at The New York Times, and special thanks to Mia for making this episode possible. Iris Adler is our executive producer, additional help this week from Catherine Brewer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Special thanks also to Julia Simon and Anya Stremian at The New York Times. Additional music courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My other job is hosting an NPR show called On Point. Check it out in your podcast feed. Happy Valentine's Day. We'll see you next week.